This episode of Branching Out is brought to you by Timios Title.
Welcome to Branching Out, a podcast presented by the reporters and editors of the Acorn newspapers, offering you a closer look at the news in your community.
What is up, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Branching Out. It is Monday, January 10th. I am your host for today, Kyle Jory, editor of the Thousand Oaks Acorn. We have a very exciting episode on tap with two people very closely involved with the cleanup of the Santa Susana Field Laboratory. They're going to come on today to talk about that, and also a recent documentary that they were in that was aired on MSNBC, a fascinating documentary called In the Dark of the Valley. Hopefully some of you listening today have already seen it. It is now I don't think there's any way to watch it anywhere right now, but I imagine soon it will be available on streaming services as well. But it is just an eye-opening look at everything going on with the field laboratory. If you know nothing about the situation at all, I would encourage you to watch it. And even if you do know everything there is to know or follow the story closely, I would encourage you to watch it as well. It's really that good. So not taking a position one way or another on the cleanup, but certainly on this film, I think they did a wonderful job with it. So please, if you get a chance and can track it down, In the Dark of the Valley, watch it, and it will make what we're talking about today resonate that much more. Before we get started, I do want to recognize and say Happy New Year to all of our listeners out there. It has been a difficult few weeks, I'm not going to lie, in Ventura County, LA County, really all across the state, and it seems like around the nation as the Omicron variant does its worst and really just runs up numbers, new cases that we've never seen before. If I can do my little part, I can share that over the winter break, I came down with a case of what I believe was Omicron. I never did actually get a chance to get tested, but I was sick for about 3 or 4 days, sore throat, runny nose, but no real hard flu symptoms. I am double vax, so I don't know if that had something to do with it. And full disclosure, everyone's situation is different. Everyone's reaction is different. But from the vast majority of people who I've spoken with, and there's quite a few of them, that have come down with this. I'm sure everyone listening knows several people that have tested positive. Most of what I'm hearing is mild cases, bad cold at worst. You're really not as bad as a bad flu. And no one I know personally has been hospitalized as a result. But there's no doubt this is having a huge impact on our hospital system, on our first responders, and our businesses as employees call in sick from exposures or from testing positive. So it is going to be a trying month. At least, hopefully not much more than that. Studies indicate that Omicron comes in very strong and then hopefully goes quickly. But until then, I'm going to just encourage everyone to, you know, use those common sense safety measures, do what you can to avoid this. If you're not vaccinated, consider getting vaccinated. And really just be thinking about our business community and our hospitals. I think they both need all of our love and attention right now as we go through another bout, another wave of this thing. So, all right, well, enough about Omicron. Let's get today's interview. Really excited again for it. So we'll jump right in with our guests, Denise Duffield and Melissa Bumstead, two stars of In the Dark of the Valley, recently released on MSNBC. This episode is brought to you by our new friends at Timios Title. Are you thinking about selling your home? Most people don't know that you can shop around for your own title and escrow company. Why is this important? Because choosing the right title and escrow company can lead to a host of benefits. Better visibility into your transaction. An easy way to check your transaction status and view your documents online. And most of all, choosing your own title and escrow company can save you hundreds, even thousands of dollars on unnecessary fees. Most escrow companies charge a base fee, plus $2 per every $1,000 of the property. That can easily add up to thousands of dollars. At a bundled rate of just $575 per side, Timios is helping home sellers in California save thousands of dollars on their transactions. Locally, Timios is at 211 Village Commons Boulevard, number 13 in Camarillo. You can call them at 800-377-8019. Or find them online at www.timios.com. That's T-I-M-I-O-S.com. Please contact them today and see how much you can save. That's Timios Title. All right. Well, I'm so excited to have with us today two people who are very closely involved in a major story in our area, in our region, really in the state, having to do with the cleanup of the Santa Susana Field Laboratory.
I mentioned before we went on and started recording that I was in Simi Valley as the editor of the Acorn between 2007 and 2010, when a lot of major, you know, movement was going on in this big fight. Haven't been as involved as closely in the last few years, but watching that documentary, In the Dark of the Valley, that came out, I mean, it just kind of got my energy back about this whole story, and it just reminded me what a huge matter this is. So joined today by Melissa Bumstead. Hey, Melissa, how's it going?
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thrilled to have you. And of course, Denise Duffield, right? Denise, thanks for being here.
Yep. Happy to be here.
So everyone can, we're obviously doing a podcast, they won't be able to see us. We're actually on a Zoom call. We can see each other. Well, let's just start, if you wouldn't mind, by introducing yourself, saying where you live and your connection to the cleanup, and then just how long you've been involved and what got you involved in this big fight. So can we start with you, Melissa?
Sure thing. I'm Melissa Bumstead. I am a resident of West Hills for the last 12 years. And actually, for most of my life, I lived in Ventura County before that. About 5 miles on the other side of the hill of the Santa Susana Field Lab. I grew up having no idea that it existed. Apparently, both of my parents, who grew up in Simi Valley and in West Hills, thought it was an urban legend. And, you know, had no issues. My daughter was diagnosed with an incredibly rare and aggressive form of leukemia in 2014. And, you know, of course, at first we thought it was just very bad luck. Through the course of her treatment at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, we just kept meeting family after family after family whose children also had incredibly rare forms of pediatric cancer, which in of itself is very rare. There's only about 15,000 new cases of pediatric cancer in America every year. And so we knew something was wrong right away when we just kept meeting people a block over, two blocks over, a mile over. They went to our park. That's when we grouped together and we started mapping ourselves on Google Maps and realized we all lived in a giant circle around the mountain, but we had no idea what was in the mountain. So that's when we started Parents Against the Santa Susana Field Lab, as we started learning and reading all the reports and studies and getting more involved. So I've been involved for about 6 years now. The petition that we started at the beginning, it's a change.org/Santa Susana, has over, I believe, 740,000 signatures for the cleanup. We have a lot of momentum, but we haven't actually gotten anywhere. So I'm sure we'll get more into that.
We'll get into all of that. Well, thank you. Thanks for being here. And Denise, will you share your background?
My name is Denise Duffield. I am the Associate Director of Physicians for Social Responsibility, Los Angeles. Our organization has been deeply involved in the fight to clean up the contamination, really since the 70s, when we first became aware of it, the late 70s, when Dan Hirsch, Community Rec, Bridge the Gap, LA Daily News, NBC broke the story about the meltdown, but more heavily in 89 when the Rocketdyne Cleanup Coalition was founded as an organizational partner. I myself have been more involved for the last 15 years. And our role really is to provide technical assistance and information to the community, to the public, to our health professional members. And it's just a really critical role, because we get calls from people like Melissa all the time. And I will always say, as I did, and we just recently looked at our very first email exchange before the film came out, which was pretty crazy to look at. I can't ever tell somebody with any certainty, yes, this is where your child's cancer came from. But I can tell you those contaminants on the hill are there. They're there in high quantities. That's not disputed. It's not disputed what their impact is on health, nor the fact that they get off the hill and people are exposed to numerous pathways. And to provide scientific information, which is just very easy for the regulatory agencies and the polluters to spin. Key information. And I think, and I hope when we go along further, we can talk about some things. I think it's also sometimes a difficult story for the media to grasp, and is hearing from different sources, which, you know, are often not accurate. So particularly, I hope later on, we can talk about the Acorn's idea that there should be a compromise in the cleanup that the state and that the political, that the polluters agreed to, right? This is their own cleanup. They agreed to do this. And then other things like half-life and what's not, which I think there's also been some misunderstandings about.
Okay.
So that's our role. Yeah. And I'm happy to be here and support Melissa in the community. And you know, if any health professionals are listening and would like to get involved, love to hear from you.
All All right, terrific. Well, definitely, I'll make a note. We'll definitely get into those issues later. I do want to start with the film, though, because that's kind of what was the impetus for us to be here. Can you, again, either Melissa or Denise, where we want to start? How did this all come about? Who was first approached? Did someone know the director? What's the kind of background and how this film got made?
Well, when my daughter relapsed in 2017, we were in the bone marrow transplant ward at Children's Hospital, and I kept getting emails and calls from someone at change.org, and they said that they wanted to provide free service to help us with our petition. And of course I wrote that off, but they actually meant it. They really believed in what we were doing. They saw similar problems and wanted to support us. So they actually hired a film crew to come out to do a 2-minute video to include with the petition, which then turned into a 7-minute video, which then later we were approached by those same three filmmakers, Nicholas, Brandon, and Derek. And they said, you know, we've realized this is such a big story and we would like permission to tell your story. I've got to say, they're the only people in Hollywood I would ever allow in my home. They're such trustworthy, nice, decent people. I feel incredibly fortunate to have worked with them, and turned out they were very talented. It was quite a strange experience, but completely grateful for their hard work and commitment to see that through.
Yeah, I mean, they have some real intimate moments in the film where they're obviously at home with you, just kind of being a family at one point, doing Halloween, trick-or-treating. But what was it like having, I always wonder, people that are involved in these projects, having cameras around? How often were they around? Would they do it, say, a few days at a time, weeks? How did they kind of sparse it out? I mean, it's shot over several years, correct?
Right. It was a 3-year process. Sometimes it was scheduled. Sometimes they'd come for meetings and then they'd stay afterwards. It was generally pretty casual. The thing I really appreciate about them is that they never got in the way. They went out of their way to not, you know, try to set up a scene if it was, you know, especially if it was an intimate moment. They're very respectful. So in a lot of ways, we didn't really notice they were there. My kids love them. They're just funny people, funny guys. And so it was a pleasure having them. It gets a little lonely around here without them sometimes, not without the cameras, but just, you know, them as people. They were great.
Fascinating. You know, it struck me, Denise, that a film like this hadn't been made sooner. I mean, even when I showed up at Simi Valley, and I like how Melissa explains, like, not knowing that this was even there. You know, when I came into Simi Valley, I didn't know what the Field Lab was. And you start to learn about this and you just go, my goodness, what a huge story. Why don't more people know about it? Any thoughts, Denise, on why it took so long for a film like this to be made? And then maybe just share your thoughts on the film itself.
Many people have tried to make films about Santa Susana, and good people, and some that may still be in process. I have sat down for numerous interviews on the subject. And what happens is that one of the issues is that, where do you end, right? Where's the wrap on this? And there's so many aspects of it. There's the workers, which never seem to get enough attention. I really would like to see a film just about the workers. There's the community. There's the story behind NASA and the founding. There's just so many aspects of it, and it goes on and on and on. But I think that has been one of the hurdles. And what these filmmakers were able to do is just say, this, you know, we close it here. And then I think in this case, there was just an extraordinary amount. And I don't know what the other films look like, but this is such, they just did such a great job.
Yeah.
I think that's what sort of the other thing is they knew when to wrap, and they knew they had to wrap.
Yeah.
And that this, because the story was going to go on. And you can see as they end with more recent news coverage of events that weren't happening, which I think was a brilliant touch. They're still adding in headlines.
So, yeah, it went all the way up until release. Yeah, it was amazing, the news that was coming out.
Yeah, and so that, I think, was another really smart move on their part. Otherwise, they would still, you know, be doing this. And then I think the other thing that's important to say is that there really has been a lot of coverage on this, but the communities move in and out.
Yeah.
You guys have covered it for a long time. Mm-hmm. The Daily News, the LA Times has covered it, the BC Reporter, absolutely, long time, top level coverage, NBC, some of the other local stations, but it comes and goes. And if somebody's not sitting in front of the TV that night, they didn't pick up the paper that day, they didn't see it on Facebook that day, they're not going to know. And so this really does give a whole level of visibility to it. And I think the other thing that probably was helpful was that they could tell the story through Melissa's journey.
Yeah.
And that also just was a hook that made the entire telling of the lab, its history, its the contamination, the cleanup challenges, much easier to tell.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great point. I mean, there's a lot of themes in the film, but obviously, you see a lot of work from a lot of people. But obviously, Melissa, you kind of end up our heroine of the film. You know, there's a lot of highlight on you becoming the face of the cleanup over these last few years. What was it like seeing yourself on TV like that? And what's it been like, I guess, taking on that incredible responsibility now of kind of being seen as the person who is the face of this?
You know, it's bittersweet for me. I can't ever really escape the fact that the only reason I'm doing this is because my daughter got cancer, you know, and I'm incredibly humbled and grateful for the opportunity to be a voice for the cleanup. But, you know, in all honesty, I just wish my kids had a regular childhood and none of this was happening and my voice wasn't needed. But this is the opportunity I have to make a difference and try to not only protect our kids here in the community from contamination, but most people don't realize that the Department of Energy, one of the responsible parties at the Santa Susana Field Lab, they have 107 other radioactive sites across America, and 1,500 Superfund sites are in America. Those are environmental emergencies, and children are living all around those. And we feel very strongly that, you know, the cleanup agreement that we have for the Santa Susana Field Lab is one of the most comprehensive in the nation. It's groundbreaking. And we're a small site, really. And we think that the pushback that we're getting from the responsible parties and Boeing and even the DTSC, they're afraid to set that precedent. But we understand the huge responsibility that what we're doing has the potential to protect maybe millions of children across America. Maybe 15,000 cases of new cancer every year will become, you know, that horrible memory, and we won't have nearly that many. That's my goal. But it is weird watching myself on film. I think just to emotionally protect myself, I just feel like I'm watching someone else's story. And maybe that's just normal for people who see themselves on film. I don't know. But my kids still want to be on film. I think they say like they want to grow up and be an actor. One day they'll be on TV. That just cracks me up. So
that's great. How did you?
So, you know, this is Sylvie Belmont, and I'm also in this call here. I do have a question, though. I think that one of the big questions here is, what does the cleanup entail? What do we want? Can you kind of walk us through what that means?
I can start with some of this. And I think it's important because, again, I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. And I'll start with cleanup. So that what a cleanup involves is removing contaminated soil, essentially, and taking it to a place where it does not risk public health. So that's why we've had, for example, some fights about the demolition of the buildings and the debris and where that radioactive debris goes. It needs to go to a properly licensed site. It needs to go to a site that's away from people, that has multiple levels of protection against the environment, that has a health physicist on site. It can't go to municipal dumps. It can't go to regular facilities. And so in our work at PSRLA, we really are trying to focus on upstream solutions, which stops us having to have these cleanups.
Go back to here at PSRLA, probably.
Yes, PSRLA, we work on upstream solutions. So that means trying to make sure that polluters don't contaminate, and the DTSC enforces agreements, and the DTSC requires polluters to do the full cleanup so that we don't have to have this issue of taking contamination from one place and putting it somewhere else. But that is essential. It's essentially a simple process. What gets involved, though, and this is where the devil becomes in the details, is how much. And we want an amount, and all the polluters in the state agreed to clean it up to background levels, which means they wouldn't be responsible for cleaning up any contamination that they didn't create, that wasn't already there. It was meant to be fair and to be simple. This is what the average level of these contaminants are in the surrounding areas in similar geography. This is how much contamination is in Santa Susana for various chemicals. That's the amount that we clean up. So when we have risk figures, like in some areas of the site, where if somebody lived on the site, 96 out of 100 people would get cancer. If you want to say, okay, we're not going to do that full cleanup, we're going to do half of it, then you're talking about what? You know, they said at one point, 5 in 10 five in 10 people, the EPA
getting cancer.
Right. Okay. It's 96 out of 100 now. When we're done with what we want to do, it'll be one in five. The EPA's goal is one in a million. So it's sort of, so when we talk about things like compromise, I think it's important for people to understand these were agreements that everybody signed, and they signed them with a very clear rationale, and it was meant to be actually simple. And
this
of course,
in 2007, that's not what we're talking about.
I'm talking about 2010, the 2010 agreements. Yeah. Which went through a public review process, right? There were, you know, everybody was submitting comments on it. And the vast majority, 98% of the comments supported, which included, by the way, support from all the cities nearby, the counties, LA, Ventura County, our state representatives, our federal representatives. There were only a handful that were opposed. And you can see in the response to comments that DTSC at that time sort of neatly dispelled some of the reasons that they were, oh, it's going to moonscape the site. No, DTSC said it will not. Oh, X, Y, and Z. No, it will not. So I think the other thing that comes into play with the cleanup then is frankly propaganda and spin. We've seen, you know, Boeing create a website called Protect Santa Susana. We created one, Protect Santa Susana from Boeing. With lots of narratives about the environment's going to be destroyed, the animals are going to be killed, all this stuff, when in fact, the cleanup would protect wildlife. They're not even going by ecological risk factors. So so to Sylvie's question, the mechanics of it are relatively simple, but the information then gets politicized. And frankly, I'm just going to use this word, there are abject, like, lies in some of these documents about how much soil would have to be removed. There are the little fudge factors, like inflating how much, you know, saying that if there's a spot of contamination here, we're going to have to dig all the way down to bedrock. Or if there's a spot of contamination near this pond, we're going to dig up the whole pond. No, you do not. You do not have to dig up the whole pond. You just have to get that part of the contamination. So having teams of public health researchers and some of the folks, particularly at Committee to Bridge the Gap, who dive into these documents, look at the footnotes, and they'll reference another paper, and you'll go to that paper and you'll see that paper does not say what it says in that footnote that it says. That's what makes it more complicated than it should be. That's some of the elements that make, and it I think is sort of designed for make people go, ah, you know. Yeah. I certainly have felt that way myself.
I feel like
I just don't understand why it hasn't been done yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the bottom line is it comes down to
money,
you know, and that's really ironic considering how much money Boeing has. You know, I think I also frankly think it if they can perpetuate some of these untruths, then they also in some degree have some liability protection against liabilities. So yeah, it's saying the same thing.
It's certainly shifted the narrative, this idea that, and that's what's at the heart of this, is how much dirt has to be moved. And when Boeing says, because I hear city officials say this too, that they're concerned that they'll have to remove so much earth that will actually hurt. So you're saying that's just not
true. I'm saying that is bleep. I mean, that is bleep, and it's demonstrable, right? I mean, first of all, once again, these agreements were signed to and agreed to by all responsible parties and by DTSC. DTSC itself has refuted some of the claims. And so what we're hoping for coming up, and this is something the public should know about, is an environmental impact report coming out where folks can weigh in, and we need to make sure that the information in that is accurate and that it does not have these crazy inflated figures. And that it tells us how they got to those crazy inflated figures.
Well, so you want to say something?
Well, I mean, we are in favor of PSRLA, Committee to Bridge the Gap, Parents Against Santa Susana, all the other cleanup advocates. We want the best, most stringent, comprehensive cleanup. And yet we're saying that's too much. You know, I feel like that has to say something that it's, I think of the cleanup kind of as like cancer treatment, you know, obviously, and I'm familiar with that. It's horrific to watch to see someone have to go through what it takes to be healed. And it's crucial though. It's the long-term solution to be able to keep life going. And there are people who are afraid to even move, you know, the smallest amount of dirt. I'm debating if I want to use this analogy or not. Because again, it sounds like there's too much horror. I mean, in general, when Grace was getting treatment, people were horrified that she was going to be on chemo even though, by the way, parents actually do not have the ability to choose what treatment their children will have, their minors, they're actually, it's part of the law. I could not take my daughter off chemo unless she was terminal. But they would be so horrified that she was going to have chemo because she would lose her hair. And wouldn't that be traumatic? And to be honest, losing her hair was the easiest part of her whole journey. And I think when people think of the cleanup, they think of like, you know, the old growth oak trees are protected. I don't know if people realize that. The mountains are protected. The historic artifacts, all of that is already protected. We're talking about mostly places where these buildings were built. You know, they're under pavement, they're under concrete. It's those surrounding areas that have already been defaced. It's not nature that we're trying to remove. The majority of this has already, you know, been destroyed by these buildings. When you remediate even that dirt, you know, it might be like someone losing their hair during chemo, but it saves the life in the long term. And I think people forget too that ecologically, I mean, when you look at Chernobyl, the animals have adapted, but actually a lot of them died. A lot of the species are dying. And we're seeing that over generations that maybe you didn't see the first generation or the second generation, but now the DNA damage is irreparable.
Have they done studies on that? Because I always wondered about that. The mountain lions that are born there. There are studies that show what?
In Chernobyl, are we speaking of the local?
Local.
Well, there are studies, but they've not been done specifically to see the contamination ecological risk factors. But we do know that the fish and game came through, and they've already gone through to make sure that all the existing species, especially any that are endangered or, you know, at high risk, are going to be protected throughout the cleanup process. So the amount of damage done is so minimal compared to the health of the habitat, the health of the wildlife, but especially the children who live nearby.
And whenever the conversation goes here, I mean, I brought it up because I think it's important to correct misunderstandings, particularly some that were just recently in the paper. But I also feel like I'm not, it's a conversation that that is beside the point. Most of the contamination is in areas, as Melissa said, where there's already been, the nature's been destroyed. There's roads, there's buildings, it's been graded. That's where most of the contamination is. There's a lot of contamination offsite that will never get cleaned up because there's not gonna be those sort of studies. Nobody's gonna be sampling at the bottom of some of those, you know, deep into Brandeis, for example, in Duruncle Canyon. You know, there was sampling done there prior to the development. They found strontium 90, they built anyway, but there's not gonna be any more testing of what contamination migrates down there. So we're talking about a cleanup of what's at the main source on the site in areas that have already been defiled. They're already disturbed.
You say in the film, Denise, and I've heard you say this again, the idea that a cleanup to recreational would leave 98% of the contaminants behind. Where does that come from?
That comes from another misunderstanding, which is that people are only on the site infrequently, right? So it's like, if you live on a site, if you live on it somewhere and you have a backyard garden, for example, as many people do, a suburban residential cleanup standard would take that into place, you have a stronger cleanup because you're going to be living on it. You're going to be there 24/7. You might be actually growing and eating something from it. Recreational, they say, hey, it's a park. People are going to be coming in. They're going to be coming out. We don't have to clean it up. In Santa Susana's case, the park's on a hill. The contamination migrates. There are people who live right near the site and right below it. They don't live in recreational spaces. They live there 24/7. So it's not to mention that if there's going to be, you know, park rangers and whatever the hell else, there will be people there. But the fact of the matter is, and one thing we're really pushing for and even looking for legislation that would do this, is that all cleanup decisions take into account adjacent land uses. Because contamination and migration, because contamination doesn't stay, particularly on the top of the hill, it can't defy gravity. So even if this particular future use might be recreational, the people who live next to it don't live recreational, they live there all the time, and leaving 98% of the contamination there means they're gonna continue to be subject to a whole heck of a lot.
And migration is part of the story that we did this week with regards to the stormwater discharge permits that are gonna be renewed. You want to tell us a little bit more about that and why it's important? Why should people care about that issue?
I'm going to take that to Melissa.
You know, after the 2018 Woolsey fire, there was that rainy season right after the Woolsey fire. Early 2019, there was a Los Angeles Water Board meeting, and Boeing had 57 exceedances. And that's contamination above the legal limit that flowed off the in the stormwater past these testing centers and eventually found its way into the LA River, Arroyo Seamy, and, you know, ended in the Pacific Ocean. 57 is unheard of. And that is including heavy metals like lead, mercury, you know, things like arsenic. We had all sorts of heavily toxic chemicals, TCE, perchlorate, dioxins, and even gamma radiation. That was all found after the Woolsey fire. What we're seeing now is that Boeing is trying to renew that wastewater permit. And they are proposing to take pretty much every place that they had an exceedance, every time that they went over with lead during the Woolsey fire. Well, this new permit now raises the level so they would never have an exceedance again. They're raising, for example, with lead, I believe it's 4.5 micrograms per liter of lead that would be discharged every day under their current permit. Well, that was violated after the Woolsey fire. Now they're looking at 95.
Yeah, they didn't get penalized after the Woolsey fire, from what I saw in the report, because that was a natural occurrence that they had no control over or something.
That is according to Boeing's paid expert board. And the Los Angeles Water Board had an expert panel, and they all said at the beginning, we are here because we are paid by Boeing. They found absolutely no link between gamma radiation and the field lab that it just washed down. They said it was because of burnt light poles. I mean, it was.
And this happens. This happens in a lot of the sites that we work at. It's almost like polluter, you know, 101.
Yeah, it was absurd.
If you're looking for professional house cleaners who deliver a consistent, quality job, look no further than Made in America House Cleaning Services. Made in America has a dependable and loyal staff of cleaners who are fully licensed, bonded, and insured to work in your homes, and they even pay workers' comp on all employees. And as I understand it, that's pretty rare. Made in America has been serving the Greater Conejo Valley for over 30 years, and owner Paul Lopez has been a resident of Thousand Oaks since 1977. For a free house cleaning estimate, call Paul today at 805-499-7259. Or find them on the web at madeinamericaonline.com. That's Made in America, M-A-I-D.
Since we just touched on it, I did want to bring up something that happened really recently, and it comes up at the end of the film, was the report after the Woolsey fire happened. And I know, Melissa, your group, right when the fire was happening, I seem to remember, you know, there was this fear that this fire was the worst case scenario, that this would be the event that would get the migration off site. And originally, again, our government agencies told us that didn't happen. Well, then suddenly we get this study last year saying, wait a second, there were some of these contaminations, especially radioactive, found off site. And that seemed to really just kind of reignite this issue again. Tell me, what was your thoughts on that whole situation with Woolsey?
I remember exactly where I was. I got a call from Denise saying the Santa Susana field lab's on fire. And I panicked. I actually called the air quality board, was able to get up to the top management, and they told me because the DTSC was not willing to say that contamination could get off the Santa Susana field lab, it would not even issue a warning. Because, I mean, personally, as a mom, I'm always thinking proactive, and I'm always thinking what is the most health protective. If I didn't know about the Santa Susana field lab, I would want to notice saying there is a very small chance that contaminate. I mean, like the least they could have done was say, just keep your kids in. There's a small chance that smoke could be toxic. As it was more than a small chance. And those of us who knew about the Santa Susana field lab, we knew the potential of what that fire could do by making, well, let's take a contaminant like plutonium-239. That has a 24,000 year half-life. And inhaling 1/1,000,000th of an ounce, statistically, 100% will cause lung cancer. It's one of the most dangerous elements in the world, and it is at the Santa Susana Field Lab. It is contaminating the soil. It has been found on site. When something like that, or you know, strontium-90, which acts like calcium, there's a an uptake. That means that the plants will actually absorb it into their own structure. It is now a radioactive leaf or flower or grass. When that catches on fire, it doesn't stop being radioactive. That continues, and now you have radioactive ash and smoke. The study that was done found that 3%, according to their sampling, 3% of that smoke and ash was likely radioactive. And, you know, all of us who were there, we saw how much smoke came from that fire. We couldn't breathe that night because of all the smoke coming into our house. And that's just another example of how the DTSC, and we see this across, you know, we're in other networks with environmental groups across the state and environmental justice groups. They're having the same exact problems where the DTSC takes the least protective stance. They intentionally, I wouldn't say they falsify their reports as much as they do it as sloppy as possible. They were there 4 days after the fire checking the air quality. I mean, that doesn't even make sense. So when the study came out, it wasn't a huge surprise, but it was still horrifying, especially as a mom, especially living here. I really felt like the DTSC failed us as a community by not at least giving us some advance warning.
And yeah, he said, had you looked at this possibility before of a fire and thought about
there has been a possibility. There was a fire, the Topanga fire in 2005 burnt the site and burnt the nuclear area. And we've had families come forward at one of the DOE hearings with a child who had cancer, whose doctor said it was environmental. And he, that particular father, really thought it was the Topanga fire that had caused it because we remembered the ash, all the ash that they had.
And we've had 9 glioblastomas in Simi Valley just since the war.
Glioblastoma is related to thorium exposure. We found that Marco Kaltofen told us that a couple weeks ago in December, and we were really horrified because those cancers were found since the fire. I think it's important for people to understand the contamination migrates from the site all the time. It doesn't take a fire to do that. Wind events, rain events will cause the contamination to migrate. I think it's also important to understand that in the Woolsey fire, much of the site, that 80% of the site burned, was the site that had incredible chemical contamination. And this particular study we did was limited to radioactivity. That's their expertise, that's what they did. So it can't really be taken on its face to give anybody an all clear or to give anybody an uh-oh, because we won't know that information about the chemicals. And of course also it was limited to who the volunteers that we had, you know, who were willing to come in. But that site is always going to be at a fire hazard, which is why, and I say this in the film, taking down the water tanks, tearing out the piping, why on earth NASA would do that, whatever, if it's going to be part, whatever it is, you'd want to, if you have that infrastructure there, why remove it? They could have put that fire out like that, is a concern. And I think another thing, Melissa mentioned half-lives, you know, it's there's a half-life, but there's also what we call the hazardous life, which is how long it takes for that to decay and no longer be harmful. And that's 10 to 20 times the half-life. So for plutonium 239, 24,000 years, we're talking almost 500,000 years until it would be completely harmless. For strontium 90, for cesium 137, 30-year half-life, you do the 10 to 20, we're talking about 600 years. So we need to get that site cleaned up because it's going to be always in a fire risk area and the contaminants are going to be dangerous for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, you understand as journalists, you know, we don't want to frighten people, you know, and maybe sometimes that's our bias because we don't want to, and I'm thinking about our listeners hearing this now, some of them are probably a little frightened. I mean, let's talk about this question of, you know, have there been studies that have solidly linked any of this contamination to cases of cancer? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, we do have the Morganson study. And I also think, you know, there's been some conversation about media reporting in COVID in the same sort of situation. What's too much? What's enough? What's alarmist? What's not? In the case of Santa Susana, quite frankly, I don't think people are scared enough. I don't think they're scared enough. I think that it's these things become perfect crimes, right? There's sometimes a latency period between exposure and getting cancer of up to 20 years. People move away. We've had lots of calls after the film from people who my children of adult workers who died. So the impacts are far and wide. They impact people's lives. And It becomes just like, yeah, well, I guess we get used to COVID now. And we're just going to, you know, the same thing. Well, I guess we got this mountain of goo from Santa Susana. It's whether you're thinking about your own family or you're thinking about others, it's urgent. I mean, this goes on and on and on. So in terms of the studies, we had the Morganson study, and the Morganson study looked at, and it was a small study. It was funded by the Agency for the Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, but it found that people who live 2 miles from the site had a 60% greater incidence of certain cancers than those who live 5 miles from the site. And the cancers he looked at were particularly ones that have ties to the contaminants on the site. So that is the most definitive study we have. We also do know, of course, that there have been multiple lawsuits. There was a class action lawsuit against Boeing where the plaintiffs prevailed. And then we know we have the retinoblastoma mothers who also, you know, 11 cases of retinoblastoma near Santa Susana, less than 300 diagnosed in a year. Those mothers sued Boeing and won. So that's what we have. But what I tell people is, once again, I can't tell you for certain that you're exactly how your cancer was caused. This is, by the way, what polluters count on. It makes it the perfect crime, right? Well, you don't know. You could have got that from the vid. You could have got it from that. Mm-hmm. But we do know what's there, and we do know it causes cancer if people are exposed to it, and we do know it gets off the hill. That's why our focus is on the cleanup. So at some point, it becomes like a circular thing. Like
yeah. I mean, Boeing's own study showed 96 out of 100 people, that's their data, would get cancer if they lived on certain parts of the site right now. As it stands. I mean, and I've seen the documents. I've gone through it with a fine tooth comb. It actually says that. It's horrifying. So even if they were to say, well, maybe only 0.01% of that contamination gets to community, I'm just saying like a ridiculously number they would say, right? So like it can't harm you. It comes because that's what the DTSC says. They says it comes off the site, but not at levels that can harm human health. Well, how much of 96 out of 100 is far away from the EPA's 1 in a million, you know. Yeah,
and even that projection of not levels that would harm human health is suspect for numerous reasons.
Right. So this is like Denise said, nobody wants to be afraid. But if there is something that's going to harm my children, I don't even let them drink out of BPA plastic cups. You know, we try to eat the healthy dozen, the organic, you know, I go to extremes to make sure my children are safe. And so even though it's terrifying to think that I live less than 3 miles away from one of the most radioactive sites in America.
And you're still there, right? I mean, you haven't
moved. Well, we did try to move.
That day.
My daughter relapsed the same day that we actually had an offer on a house in Indiana. And we canceled the sale from the hospital hallway, which was especially hard because we were trying to outrun cancer. We were trying specifically to get away from the Santa Susana Field Lab as far as we could and kind of start life over. So that was the small heartbreak compared to my daughter getting cancer again. The second time was so much worse.
Yeah, obviously people that saw the film, they got to meet Grace Ellen and see a lot of her. Can you update us? How is she doing right now? What's the latest?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you for asking. Actually, we just had her 4-year bone marrow transplant anniversary, and she's still cancer free. That's why in your paper, you guys have done an excellent job covering Aiden's story. Aiden has the exact same cancer my daughter has. This is like a 1 in a million children will ever get this cancer. So to see two of them living this close to each other, plus I know a third child who had this exact same type of leukemia. These are, again, when people say, well, maybe it's not coming from the lab, there's only a certain point of statistical outliers.
Yeah.
You know, and once you go past that, that becomes fact instead of just saying this, you know, it could be a coincidence. Well, when you have that many coincidences, it's no longer a coincidence. So that's why we're hoping and praying that Aiden also finds a bone marrow transplant match.
And they are doing the search right now. There are many events. You can find that on Match for Aiden on Facebook.
Sure. Yeah. An anonymous donor saved my daughter's life. You know, I'm so grateful. And she just had her 12th birthday 2 days ago. And it just makes you stop and think like how grateful I am that a stranger made it so she could have a 12th birthday. I'm sorry, I'm tearing up a little bit. That's but, you know, it was her life.
Just thinking about that day.
I think I have a lot more time. I want to make sure. So what is the key dates this year? What should people be looking for if they want to plug into this? You mentioned the environmental impact report. When could we see that? Do we have any idea? And are there going to be meetings? What's kind of the outlook for 2022 in terms of this fight?
Well, we have the water board hearing coming up. Comments are due by 5 p.m. on January 18th. The meeting itself will be on February 10th, I believe. And again, that's critical. People don't have to be scientists and experts to say, I don't want contamination in my community. I don't want it around my kids. You know, we live here. We have a right to say, I don't care if Boeing doesn't want to pay for money. I have the right as a parent to say, I do not want extra lead, extra mercury, extra arsenic in the waterways that are coming off the Santa Susana Field Lab. So that's critical. The EIS has not come in from the DTLC yet. I'm sorry. Yeah. It gets so confusing. Yeah. The acronyms kill me.
Too. Yeah.
Kill me. But the EIR has not been out yet. When it does, we're doing our best to educate the community. That's one of the big goals of Parents Against Santa Susana Field Lab, is to make the data accessible, because we want people to make their own informed decisions about what is right for their family. We're not trying to, you know, we're not trying to force anything on anyone. We're trying to make it fair so people can actually decide, you know, what they want to allow in their community and with their families. So we are preparing for a big fight for that. Currently, Boeing, the DTSC, and the LA Water Board are in private negotiations right now. They will most likely, our prediction is, they will come up saying that Boeing will do a residential cleanup. That sounds amazing. However, they're cooking the books, and we've already seen that from other proposals that Boeing has brought in. It's a really complicated document that we're going to break down for the public in a video that will be available soon about the SRAM. And that's where we as a community need to stand up and say, you know, it's not okay to try to give us the most dangerous cleanup. It's not acceptable. And as parents, we don't have to stand for that. We have a say, we have a powerful voice. And as community members, we're going to try to make sure everybody has the opportunity to understand the science and to be able to stand up and decide what's right. We don't like that Boeing is making it as complicated as possible. They hide important documents in like 2,000 pages of indexes. I mean, it's very intentional. And we have the paper trail to show that they're doing that intentionally. We have lots of FOIA requests and things that we've done to make sure that we're not just blindly pointing fingers. I mean, this was an intentional act to hide the cleanup standards from the public, even from elected officials.
Are you saying that there's now talk of, we talked about background, we've talked about recreational being the two sides of the spectrum. Now there's talk about a residential standard?
They'll rename it residential. It will not be a residential cleanup. Well,
let me just clarify. Boeing never agreed to clean up to background. Boeing refused to sign up that agreement. So Boeing has not been held accountable to the.
It was just the DOE and NASA that signed.
DOE and NASA. Yeah. Boeing signed a 2000 consent order that didn't include a cleanup in it, and that's where sort of this conversation keeps going about cleanup standards, calling something residential, but then changing the input factors. So it's really not. That's where we really need our scientists and our data crunchers and our analysts to go through and read everything with a fine tooth comb, and then we'll try to synthesize that and make it. Present it to people, do presentations on people, show them where things are at in the document, if that's what's required, so that people have a full understanding. And we haven't seen it yet, the final, so we don't know what's in it, but all the indications that we have right now are that it's going to be fairly watered down to the Boeing part. The EIR that's coming out covers the entire cleanup. So it'll cover the DOE, the NASA, and the Boeing portion as well, even though DOE and NASA have done their own environmental impact statement.
So the odds of Boeing coming back and saying, okay, we've had these meetings, we're gonna do this to background is less than one, less zero.
They will never say background.
Okay.
But they will try to spin it just the same as they did with, like Denise said, on the website that they created. And we actually were able to get a PR plan that their PR person was so proud of themselves, they posted online. I mean, it specifically details out all these steps of how they were going to rewrite the story of the Santa Susana Field Lab from one with a sordid past into a bright, natural, healthy future without doing the cleanup. And Boeing is not the only company guilty of this in America right now. And the DTSC is not the only government agency guilty of this in America right now. And that's why it's important, again, that as a community, we are probably the best resourced community in America for this type of fight. And we're kind of the oddity. Most of these sites happen in communities that have, you know, devastating poverty rates. There's sacrifice sites. Somehow we're a fairly affluent community, even though, you know, where I live in Canoga Park, there's over 40,000 residents under the national poverty level. It is still an environmental justice site. But we have the potential to stop the nonsense that the government is doing to stop these corporations from hurting, you know, millions of people. And that's something I'm proud of, the work that we're doing. And I'm proud of Physicians for Social Responsibility, Committee to Bridge the Gap, and all the people that have worked on this relentlessly for years. I mean, I might be the spokesperson, but I'm standing on the shoulders of people who have sacrificed 30 years of their lives already in this fight. And I'm so appreciative and thankful for them. So that's kind of why we are not going to let this go by. We fight against every single step that is in the wrong direction. We will not let it pass. And sometimes it just sounds like we're just making a big fuss, but if they get an inch, they're going to take a mile. That's what they're already doing.
It's important to say that we've had victories, right? We stopped hiking trails from going up to the site. Stopped the city of Simi Valley from using groundwater for drinking water. Mm-hmm. We stopped ATSDR from coming in and trying to, you know, discount previous studies and say the site didn't need cleaned up. We got the worker studies. We got the offsite population studies. We got the...
You stopped the soil from going to Kettleman, where the children there were all born with cleft palates. I mean, you guys stopped
that. I tell myself this. Because
like, what have I been doing all these years?
But there's a point.
I do, because it is hard and it's long and it seems like it'll never end and like we'll never win. And I have to remind myself this. And I'm reminding, telling the public too, like my board president likes to say, when the people lead, the leaders will follow. And so, you know, just coming back to the statement about people not being scared enough, what I think I really meant to intend is that I think if people really understood the risk there, not just themselves and their communities, I want to see them get involved. I want to, and there's just a lot of crisis right now. And there's a lot of priorities that people have to put their families first. We've got COVID, we've got economic problems, we've got climate, we've got a lot of stuff going on. But if this community continues to grow, and Melissa's leadership has been fantastic, and get involved and speak out, then I think we have a fighting chance. Because I know we won things before, so we could again. Yeah.
And we always say too, like, my daughter's buried two of her close friends from treatment who live out in this area. If we can protect one more family from ever having to bury their child from a preventable cancer by cleaning up the contamination, then all this work is worth it.
I don't think anyone can argue with that. And that's what I think the film does a great job of, is explaining your passion. You know, I know reporters over the years at the Acorn have, you know, again, I think they do their darndest. They try to be balanced. And sometimes I think you guys push back fairly or unfairly. But I think now when you see the film, you understand the passion and why you guys are the way that you are about this. But I don't want to skirt the question, because, you know, Denise brought up the editorial and the idea of compromise.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I want to just say, I mean, right now it sounds like your side is saying clean up to background or nothing.
Do what you said you were going to do. That's what they said they were going to do. If your kid messing makes a big mess in their room and says, I promise I'll clean it all up, and then says, I'm going to clean up 20% of it, but that's my compromise.
Is there no middle ground between leaving 98%, which I think everyone would agree that sounds ridiculous, and then background? I mean, is there no middle ground, Denise?
Background itself is a fair...
Background.
I mean, it's a good start. It's not telling them to clean up natural radiation.
And the only reason why you would say it should be any less is if you believe that what the polluters are telling you, right? The polluter is telling you that they're going to, why wouldn't we? If you think that compromise will somehow make it get cleaned, that if we clean up 10% of it and then at least we're done with this, that's the compromise. That's not okay. If for climate change, we say we need to reduce our emissions by this much or else we're all going to be underwater, and we say, let's compromise and only do it this much, it's not, what we want to do is protect public health. Yeah. And in some situations, particularly like if the site maybe wasn't on a hill, maybe didn't have the same kind of contaminants, maybe didn't had a different, you know, cleanup arrangement.
Maybe if there weren't a million people living within 2 miles of it.
But in this situation, everybody went in with their eyes opened. Everybody signed it. Everybody agreed this would be what
we said. Boeing did not sign.
Boeing didn't sign it, but Boeing signed a consent order. Yeah,
but that right? didn't say anything about cleaning the back.
That didn't give a cleanup.
But it does, the 2007 cleanup, just to clarify, it did say that they would clean up one to EPA, California EPA environmental standards, which is comprehensive, and two, that it would clean up according to local zoning around the community. And Ventura County has been very, very clear that includes, I mean, and if you go to the area, you'll see there's rural, residential, and agricultural surrounding the site. So essentially, if they were to do according to what they signed, which, you know, Ventura County has been very, very specific about, that it a rural, residential, or an agricultural cleanup is almost just as
great
good
as
a background.
So
you know, it's
that is true.
Splitting hairs, really.
Okay. So what about the
so site? So if Boeing says that 5 out of 10 people getting cancer is a compromise, and to what the EPA says, which is 1 in a million. Then we have a problem, right? There's 4 of us here. If you double that and add 2 more, half of us, you know, I mean, you add 1 more, actually. We had 1 more person on us. That's what their compromise is.
I see that. But what, and I don't know if this is a straw man or not, but the idea that if we continue to fight over this and it delays the cleanup, I mean, the whole story is that this is an active threat. There's families every day that are in danger. And if this fight over cleaning up this much versus that much, it extends the time it takes.
But I would say, as a mom,
that's a false premise. Yeah.
As a mom, I care about my kids as much as I'm going to care about my grandkids, as much as I'm going to care about my great.
And we're not the ones delaying it, right? I mean, they said 2034. We said that's not okay. We want the fastest possible cleanup because, going back to Sylvie's point, it's not actually that hard to actually do the cleanup.
And Jared Blumenfeld,
we're not delaying the cleanup. This isn't delaying the cleanup. We've been the EIR has been supposed to come out for 2 years. We didn't delay that. We didn't delay DOE or NASA. We're not responsible for the delays. We're upset with the delays. We're angry about the delays. In fact, I'm extraordinarily angry with delays because I know that if they had met that 2017 deadline, a lot of these kids wouldn't have cancer, right? Why Boeing got off on the water permits because it wasn't their fault. Yes, it was, because they should have cleaned it up by 2017. So the speed of the cleanup is something we have cared desperately about from a public health point
of
view.
Who's most responsible then, would you say?
DTSC.
DTSC.
More so than Boeing even?
Yeah. Absolutely. They were the ones who were meant to enforce this. I was just going through the SRAM documents and the very, very complicated set of all the it lists every chemical at the Santa Susana Field Lab that Boeing's required to clean up and how much they have to clean up and what the cancer risk would be if per cleanup type. So it shows, like, for example, that's where it shows that 99.6 people out of 10 would get cancer if they didn't do any remediation. And then they show the rural residential, which is 5 out of 10. I mean, that would be the recreational. And then when you get to the rural residential, it starts reaching that 1 in a million again. Boeing should have had that first revision to the SRAM by 2015 if they were planning on making a 2017 cleanup, right? It had to be fairly fast. And they agreed to that 2017. Boeing also agreed to that. They waited till 2016 to make any revisions. I mean, it's intentional. It is not because that we... I think they're kicking the can down the field because they never planned to do the cleanup. I think they would just walk away from it if we weren't here holding them to it. So it's, if a compromise means that my great great grandkids get cancer, so that way I don't have to worry about it tomorrow. I mean, that's not for me. That's not good enough, you know. And again, setting this precedent so that way children across America are protected. It's that big picture, you know, and nobody wants children to get cancer, but if they leave it there, children are still going to get cancer.
Yeah. And I think one of the things I really think is important to say that coming for one, I mean, I think I'm really glad we're having this conversation because we want the cleanup yesterday. We don't want to wait till 2034, and we aren't the ones making the delay. It's not that But I think that pairing that with what Melissa said, and just risk in general, I would love to be able to, I think that there's a level of injury in just wondering if your cancer could have been prevented. And when that site is cleaned up, any future pediatric cancers that happen, at the very least, they won't wonder if it could have been prevented if only that site had been cleaned up. Because that's another level, I think, of harm, to wonder, did this have to happen?
Yeah.
Did this have to happen if somebody had done their job?
Yeah.
Site cleaned up, then at the very least, that can be removed.
Yeah. And ultimately, the decision will rest with the DTSC. I mean, all the actions you guys take, the film, everything, ultimately, it's going to come down to that one agency, right?
The city of Los Angeles, or the county of Los Angeles, set aside a attorney's retainer fee. So the city of Los Angeles is ready to sue if the DTSC does not follow through. The city of Ventura County has passed a bill that they would be prepared to sue if needed.
The county of Ventura has?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And also, again, we've got all of the elected officials. I can't think of a single elected official, I can think of, there's one up in Lancaster who is vehemently against a cleanup. Ironically, he also worked for the Department of Energy, I believe. So not counting him, everyone else who's been entrenched in this for years, Sheila Kuehl and Supervisor Parks, and we've got Brad Sherman and Julia Brownlee. And these are people who've spent, decades fighting for this cleanup. They also, and these, again, they have their own scientists, they have their own environmentalists that they're also working with. They also completely support the cleanup. So I don't anticipate DTSC being able to walk away from this. And, as long as I'm alive, I'm not gonna walk away from this either.
You said, I'll kind of wrap up here. At some one point in the film, you have, I think it's right near the beginning, you say, Melissa, that everyone has the facts. This is all out there. We're smart people. What's been lacking is courage. And I certainly see in the film your courage. That definitely comes across. And a lot of the moms involved in this fight. Are you getting a feeling that you're seeing more of that courage that's going to be needed to win this fight? Is that getting, and maybe even since the film, more attention? Is there any glimmer of hope that courage will come about and that you're looking for?
I'm hoping that this next meeting with the water board will start to see some of that. But again, it's people's actions that decide it within the government agency. And, we're very open to people who've made wrong choices in the past to make right choices now, and we will champion them for that. But as far as the community goes, yes, we've just seen so many people pounding on the doors. I have 7 weeks of messages I'm still trying to get back to from community members. Community members who want to get involved and they want to make this right. And so for that, I'm so excited and so grateful. And, again, with this community being so educated and affluent, people are able to go through that data and understand it and realize, that they are able to make a change. And that's huge.
And Denise, I mean, you kind of hit on it before. You've been at this a long time. And you've had some victories, but also a lot of setbacks. Do you see this getting done? I mean, I don't want to say in your lifetime, but is there a hope that this, do you see it? Have you imagined what victory looks like? I mean, that this
you know how I can imagine what victory looks like, because I remember when the agreements were signed and that wasn't like easy. It. You know what I mean? It wasn't easy. There was, so I guess I have a muscle memory. Yeah. In my brain from what that felt like. I think if enough people join us, there's just no way, right? We have our elected officials, yes, they're with us, but they can, but we can always, they can always hear from more of their constituents, and then their voices will get louder. Some of them may step up and decide to become champions. So I think that particularly with the incredible organizing that Melissa's doing, and I just can't say enough about Melissa and what she's done and the journey she's had. I will say that email that I found from her from years ago, she said she was not going to go back to another Santa Susana meeting. She said,
swore them off.
I felt traumatized. I felt, scared by it. Don't go to another meetings, but let's stay in touch. Yeah. And look at her now. So with the kind of work that's happening now from the community, from people who live there and from just having a little bit of muscle memory, at least from the agreements, I have to think that it is possible. But most especially if people get involved, go to Melissa's Facebook page, contact all of your elected officials, even if they've already spoken out on the cleanup, the more they hear from people, the louder their voices will get. Because as I always tell people, they're called representatives because they represent you.
Yeah, we are the people. We are the government. And you know, when I look at climate change, I remember when I was a kid and they were just starting to talk about climate change, that this could be a real problem, that this could happen in our lifetime. And now we're just at the point of finally passing legislation to deal with it. I hope this doesn't take 30 to 40 years for people to understand that these sites have to get cleaned up. But we're willing to stick it through until this becomes the, you know, commonly taught about. They were right. They knew what they were talking about with climate change 30, 40 years ago. But it took a while for the larger public to kind of get behind that. I hope it doesn't take that long, but I think we're on that same journey of, we've got the facts, we've got the data, this is happening across America. I hope in my lifetime, this doesn't happen in America anymore. I hope in our lifetime, we get to see the cure. And again, that adult and pediatric cancers they're climbing every year. Pediatric cancer has gone up 40% since the 1970s. That's significantly higher than adult cancer, which is 11%. Maybe we can make that go backwards. You know, that's our goal.
Well, thank you. I mean, the work you do, I think that really comes across in the film, just all the energy and time it takes. So again, appreciate you guys coming on today. I know, you know, you guys hold us accountable, and that's what I love about.
And we're really grateful for the reporting. We're really grateful for it.
You know, we do try. I appreciate you acknowledging that, because of
it. You know, we really, really are. And I think, and you sent great photographers out. We have got, you know, we are really grateful for your
appreciate you saying that. Yeah, I mean, because that's what's hard.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I hate it when I hear, oh, there's been no coverage, when literally we've written probably 20,000 inches of coverage in the Acorn. So we know what a big issue it is. So I appreciate you saying that. Appreciate your time today. I want to just give a message to anyone who hasn't seen the film. Watch this. You know, if you don't have an opinion, if you do, it's just it's so educational. It's too bad that I'm not surprised we didn't get Boeing or the DOE to say anything on it, but at the very least, you get to hear Melissa's amazing story and learn a lot about the history. So I would encourage everyone to do that. Again, thank you both for your time. You. Really appreciate this. I know you're very
thank busy. You so much.
We really enjoyed
thank
this.
Thank you.
And thanks for dealing with our little technical issue. So, all right, guys, thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Thank you guys so much. Okay. Really appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that episode as much as I did. Hopefully the passion of Denise and of Melissa especially came across there. They live and breathe this stuff, and they are involved in it each and every day. And so it's hard as journalists sometimes, you know, as I mentioned, we write these stories and we have to present both sides. And Melissa and her side feels just so strongly that everything coming out of Boeing and some of these other agencies just cannot be trusted. And that makes it difficult when you go to Boeing and you want to hear their side, and they're saying one thing and the activists are saying another. You've got to kind of discern for yourself what the truth really is. But I appreciate them sharing the facts they did with us today. I, for one, hope no one left this interview being completely freaked out or scared. But I think it was important to drive home that the stakes are very high up at that property. And for years, this has been a story that has been mainly told in Simi Valley and in the West Valley. But this is really something, whether you're in Moore Park or Thousand Oaks, Newbury Park, even Camarillo, it's something to care about and keep an eye on. And the connection they made today is what happens here at the field lab could resonate at similar sites across the country. So just tremendous having them on. Really enjoyed it. Glad Sylvie came in. She's been covering the story very closely. So glad to have her pitch in with the interview. So I will get out of here. Don't want to take any more of your time. We will throw some links in the show notes to, you can see the trailer for the film. There's a website dedicated to it as well. And I'll link up Melissa's Facebook so you can see that, as well as some stories we've recently written about in the field lab. As always, please like, subscribe, and share. Make sure you're telling your friends about Branching Out. We want to hear from you as always. You can email us at branchingout@theacorn.com or find us on Twitter at Branching Out Pod. I've been your host for today, Kyle Jory, editor of the Thousand Oaks Acorn. Can't wait for our next episode. We will see you again next week. Thanks so much for tuning in, folks.